pandemonium reigns.
Tennessee played host to Florida on Saturday night. Wins this game 23-17 in overtime. The sixth win since the turn of the millennium against the Gators. 2001, 2003, 2004, 2016, 2022, and now 2024. Let's talk about it. My name is Dan. This is Pandemonium Reigns. Thank you so much for taking your time to hang out with me as we talk this Tennessee-Florida game. I want to just say real quick that thank you so much for the continued growth on our channel and our podcast platforms. But my goodness, what a doozy on Saturday night. What a high low of emotions. J.D. Bickell, host of one of the On3 channels, The Hard Count, forgive me, asked this question regarding, he said, Tennessee fans, is the glass half full or half empty? I don't know, JD. I don't know. And I think that's the problem. I do know this. There's a glass. I mean, there's water. How big's the glass, though? Therefore, I don't know how to tell you how much water is in it, because I don't know how big it is. So I don't know how much water we have. There's a lot of reason. What I'm getting at, there's a lot of reason to be concerned going forward for the rest of this 2024 Tennessee football schedule. We're right in the thick of this thing. Alabama is getting ready to come Saturday, 3:30 kickoff, and that's going to be a much more difficult test because we have major problems. I said on Twitter, we have million-dollar problems. Million-dollar problems. My point in that is this, is that you paid a lot of money for Nico. You've paid a lot of money for Lance Hurd, and I don't know that you're getting your dollar just yet. Just yet. I'm not saying that, you know, it was a bad decision to bring these guys in or to spend the money, but million-dollar problems. And the reason it's a problem is because this is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately sport. It's a what-have-you-done-lately-for-me sport. So, again, I don't know if that glass is half full or half empty. I will say this, though. I do think there's a lot of good things coming out of this game on Saturday night. And what I'm noticing with our program is this. We are raising the floor. That's the good news. We're raising the floor. The problem, or the bad news, is we're not pushing the ceiling. We're raising the floor, but we're not pushing the ceiling. As of right now, out of what I saw Saturday night, we're looking at an 8-4 season. Maybe I should more carefully say you're looking at an 8-4 football team. You have an 11-1 defense. You've got a 5-7 offense. You've got some problems. You have some major problems. I have a lot of thoughts on this, and forgive me because I'm probably going to sound all over the place. I'm going to do my best to structure my thoughts for you. I'm going to break this down by talking about Nico, talking about Heupel, talking about the offense. The next segment, we'll look at what were the swing plays and basically, like, where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? So let's start by talking about Nico. And already, Nico is getting a lot of the blame for this. He had a poor night. Overall, statistically, he had a porous night. 16 for 26, I think. Yeah, 16 for 26, 169, no touchdowns, a pick. Good for 6.5 yards per completion, and a QBR that is not even worth mentioning. It's bad, 17.5. Now, the good thing about Nico thus far is he's saying all the right things. In the post-game press conference, he took responsibility for the fumble, and he took responsibility for the thrown pick. Hey, doing all the right things. I think he's carrying himself exceptionally well. I think his body language is still good, which all the things that you have to have at the quarterback position and how valuable those things are, because this position is, this game in itself is extremely mental. But he's saying all the right things. And with that, I would love just to remind Tennessee fans that this guy is not Hendon Hooker. Now, I get it. Much more highly recruited than Hendon Hooker. But if you're expecting every five-star to come in and be an immediate impact, said it before, I'm gonna say it again. They're human, right? And I think what we're gonna have to come to terms with regarding Nico is that he just needs more time. He's still QB1. He's not his job is up, not up for grabs. I still think he's the best quarterback in the quarterback room. He definitely has the highest ceiling. But when I say he's not Hendon, I want you to think about some of the mistakes that Hendon had to make and how those helped turn him into what he was. Keep in mind, he threw the game-deciding pick against Pitt in 2021. If you're wanting him to be Hendon, it's just not a fair comparison. Hendon played what, 25, 30 something games in his time at Virginia Tech before transferring here. Had a nice handful of college football game experience before coming to Knoxville. Nico didn't have that. He didn't have that. Sure, playing Iowa in a bowl game, solid. It's not the same as far as experience goes. Regarding Saturday night, didn't make some plays that left points off the board. There was a route that was ran. I forget who. Brazil, I want to say. I really don't remember. In the moment in time, I went back and looked for the highlights, couldn't find it in the shortened version. I don't really need to remember who it was. It looked like a go route. The receiver turns over his left sideline, turns over his right shoulder. He's expecting it out in front of him, or he's expecting it in that line of view. That ball sails over his left shoulder out of bounds. That's on Nico. All right. Wasn't some kind of choice route or option route. The decision was made. Badly placed ball. The interception that he threw, poor. I mean, JG like the. I mean, how many times did we see Jarrett Guarantano throw an interception to a linebacker sitting underneath the route, just reading the zone, right? Or just reading the quarterback's eyes sitting in zone. That's exactly what happened. So Nico has to be better. Now, in his defense, there were passes that hit receivers' hands, and they have to make that play. They're on scholarship for a reason. If it hits your gloves, you have to make that play. And I think there is a totally different narrative that would be out on Nico if Chaz Nimrod doesn't drop that ball in the final minutes of regulation. I believe it was the final possession for Tennessee before things went to overtime. That would have put us definitely in field goal range. But I mean, that thing was going to be caught in stride. But Nimrod puts it on the ground. He catches that thing. We're talking about how Nico makes clutch plays. All right. So, as far as Nico goes, I just think that we need to settle down and we need to take our bumps and bruises on the chin regarding Nico. I think we need to come to terms with that him being gone in 2 years is maybe not what's going to happen after all. He might be a 3-year guy. Who knows? He might just totally progress and come back and, you know, he is as originally advertised and does all the things. All right. So I don't really know, JD Pickell, if the glass is half full or half empty on Nico Iamaliava. I don't know. I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful. I thought we did some things for Nico that would play to the offense's strengths, not necessarily his strength, but less pressure on the offensive line if you're picking up what I'm laying down, where we did things like, you know, move the pocket and we installed things like a power eye. I don't know what they saw in a Florida defense for us to install that, but I liked it. I mean, it's what allowed us to get into the end zone twice. So both of our touchdowns coming out of power eye. So, you know, fantastic. But again, a different narrative out on Nico Iamaliava if Nimrod catches that ball. If Squirrel, I mean, he laid out for that thing. Laid out for that thing. The hair overthrown. If that thing is an inch shorter, the narrative is different out on Nico. He's got to connect those though. Our run game has got to pair itself with those shots. They have to connect. You're seeing what happens when they don't. All right. Now let's talk about Heupel for a second. He had to have this one. He had to have this one. Had to have it. I talked about going into this game that if he loses this, I mean, he would be 1-3 against a porous Florida, and it would be hard for him to win back the fan base. I mean, he would have to do things that would be nearly impossible regarding the 24 season. He really needed this one. He absolutely had to have this one. I thought that overall our team played hard in this game. Going into this, again, I said I think the thing that you just have to do is you have to play pissed off. And I don't know that we necessarily played that way, but I do think that we played excited. Our defense played with an edge. Offense wasn't for a lack of effort. You know, it wasn't like we were just quitting on routes or quitting on pass blocking or anything. We did get caught playing patty cake with our offensive tackles just a few times. I thought those tackles got better as the game went along, though. But nonetheless, I thought we played hard. I mean, think about it. We overcame a 10-0 deficit, and Florida scored or found the end zone. First touchdown of the game with what, 7-ish minutes left in the third quarter. Now you could say, all right, hey, glass half full. You know, we fought, we got down, and we came back to win this game in overtime. The downside of that is a Josh Heupel offense didn't score any points in a whole half. It's problematic. It's problematic for a Josh Heupel offense. And I still trust Heupel to get this thing figured out, but I would be lying to you if I were to tell you that my trust is solid. It's like sand in my hands right now. I mean, it's not going fast, but you know, the boat isn't rocking a lot to knock the sand out of my hands. But that's about what's holding it together right now. Gonna need to see more innovation come Saturday against the Crimson Tide. You're gonna have to do it. Alabama is not near as vanilla as Florida is. Also thought that Heupel did some ballsy things, you know, did some things that he had to do in order to win this game. And one of them was going for it on fourth down on his own 11. I mean, hello, Les Miles. But you had to do it. You had to do it. And I think he made the right call. And he did it. Now, shifting gears a little bit, talking about the offense. Again, we stalled things like a power eye, and you know, again, didn't find any points until the third quarter. Like, who's to blame here? What is going on? Is it the absence of Mike Golish? Is it that Nico can't be trusted yet? Is it chemistry? Is it we're just operating inside of, you know, 15 to 20% of the playbook? Is it we don't trust the offensive tackles? That's where I lean. I think our offensive line is hindering us in a lot of ways. As you saw, they played absolutely porous. Anytime Nico got out of the pocket, it was pretty much a or and went on to scramble. It's pretty much a John Campbell holding call. That's the way it was. I was very critical of the run game going into this one. I still am. We are inside zone, inside zone, inside zone. And before you say, Dan, we ran other things. Yeah, we did. We ran one power, one. And if my memory serves me correctly, we ran one counter, which we scored on, by the way. Which we scored on. Oh, I said earlier that we scored on two different oh, I guess we did score on two different power eyes. Scored on a, what they call a GT counter. So your backside tackle and guard, which would have been Hurd and Kurek, get out and start lead blocking for you. Pave the way for Samson to find the end zone. I understand the inside zone calls when the tempo is going and the offensive is going fast. I understand it. It makes a whole lot more sense. Inside zone, because the simplicity of the concept of the play makes a whole lot of sense. You want to put the ball on the ground when you got things going fast. You get the defense on their heels, get the ball snapped and start running as quick as you can and keep it simple. Block the man in your zone. Tempo is not happening. So why would you not call more things? And when you have offensive woes, offensive line woes like we have right now, and defensive lines can pin their ears back and just come, football 101 screens just do a couple little different things. Screens, out of the backfield to a Samson who can catch the ball out of the backfield. We saw none of that. We did a swing pass to him and it almost got blew up. Thank God he's an athlete and just made a play. Draws, didn't do anything of that. Counters, ran one, scored. I just don't know where. Please God, tell me it's not because we're just stubborn, because stubbornness is what get coaches fired. So anyway, we came out. We opened the game from the line of scrimmage with a flood concept, a high low, found squirrel, 14-ish yards game. We opened with something similar in overtime to stays, what was either an air route or a flat route, depending on the offense. My issue with it there was nowhere to run because you were on the right hash and you ran that play to the boundary. I don't understand. I don't understand at all. But when we did things like run those flood concepts, where Nico had half the field to read, which is great. I mean, Spurrier made a living off that crap. When we did things like move the pocket, Nico had time and he was a better quarterback. I don't know why anyone defensively would look at us and say, let's just play these guys straight up. Let's do it. Play to our weakness. Stunt us. Blitz us. Make Nico make a bad decision before the ball is snapped. I spoke to Michael over the weekend, and where Nico is getting beat, it's really just pre-snap stuff. It's pre-snap stuff from a defensive perspective is what I'm getting at. So I don't know why you would play us straight up at all. I mean, don't play us in a phone booth. And I'm not saying because we're coming at you, like, dance with us, confuse us. I mean, we're not adjusting to it. So if I'm Alabama, I'm stunting and I'm showing seven and I'm rushing five, and sometimes I'm showing seven and I'm rushing seven. Everybody from here on out. If I'm anybody else and I see Tennessee on the schedule, I'm coming. Make we're I'm looking to say make we're gonna make Nico beat us through the air. We're gonna do it. That's the way we're gonna approach this thing. All right, one more thing before I move on. One more thing on the offense before I move on from it. Samson is finishing this thing, right? Samson is getting all the credit, and he rightfully should. What I don't think is getting enough credit is DeShaun Bishop. When the run game is not there, and early on, it's not there, Samson is struggling to find yards. These same plays in the same exact situations, Bishop is finding it. Bishop is, as far as the run game goes, he's getting that thing going. So it's time to put that man on scholarship. All right, let's talk about some swing plays for a second, because this one, I went into this game, reading some stats, and I told you, like, these things are so irrelevant. But there were some stats that actually screamed some potential indicative things of how this thing can unfold, and it just didn't. These stats meant absolutely nothing. But when these two brands and these two logos find the same field together at the same time, you just never know. And I should have mentioned that when I was talking about Heupel. Found a way to win this one. Found a way to win it. I mean, do you know it's been, I mean, Heupel has now done something that Dooley didn't do. Of course, Dooley never beat Florida. Butch didn't do. Butch only beat Florida once. Pruitt certainly didn't do. Heupel's now got two wins against Florida in 4 years. Should be three. Should be three. All right. And regarding this game and these two teams, I mean, think about how many times we've found a way to lose this one. 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2017, 21. Think about how many times we found a way to lose this one. You know what? And we dug deep, found a way to win it. My apologies. Back now to the swing plays. I've written down four here. I've already mentioned Heupel going for it on fourth down on his own 11. I don't know that it was a swing play as much as you just had to have that one. You had to have it. First swing play here. Opening drive, third and one. We're on the Florida 23-ish yard line. Fumble. There's some kind of, I'm about to say miscommunication. Actually, more than think, it's not miscommunication. Nico just pulls it, and he pulls it late. Should just hand it off. Should just committed to Samson at that point, but pulls it, doesn't get control of it, bounces off his chest, hits the ground. Florida football. Our defense holds them to three. That is that's a 10-point swing. That's a 10-point swing in favor of Florida drawing first blood. Imagine if we find the end zone right there, and I have all the reason to think that we would, because at the way and the manner in which we were moving the ball, obviously the field gets smaller the closer you get to the end zone. But we were humming, we're moving. I think if you find a way to get in the end zone, you set a different tone on the rest of that game, but you fumbled. And I believe that play sets the tone for the rest of the entire thing. So you've got that one. The second one is the fourth down stop with about 8-ish minutes left in the second quarter. Montrell Johnson on third down is held, excuse me, short somehow of the line to gain. I actually thought he had it, but it was spotted short. Napier runs a jet sweep, and Ricky Gibson meets him before he can hit the original line of scrimmage. What an idiot. What a boneheaded play call on their part. Napier said, "Here, we don't want this game. I don't want to be the head coach of the Gators anymore. You take it." If they put that on the ground out of the backfield and the A or B gap, 99% possibility that that is a first down on their part. All right. Major swing play. Major swing play. Next swing play. 3 minutes, 15 seconds left. First and goal. In second quarter, sorry. First and goal. Getting ready to go in the half. Right there on the goal line. Mertz is stripped by Pierce. What a play. Again, our defense coming up massive. Massive. Now, Nico ends up throwing his pick on that ensuing drive. So that's not really a point swing, but it is sure as heck a game swing. If they find the end zone right there, I mean, we're in serious trouble. Serious trouble, because the offense is just struggling to move the ball at this point. Finally, I thought the last swing play of the game, and maybe this one's less of a swing and more of just of an impact play, but Lagway throws a pick right off of our touchdown, and when now we did have to settle for three, but he just didn't see Carter makes contact with an eligible receiver, bumps him, drops back, boom, pick. It was really unfortunate that we had to settle for three there, because that would have been, massive for us to find the end zone. Another play that is of note is top of the fourth quarter, fourth and three. Lagway attempts to find Wilson on a slant, but it's batted down by Jermond McCoy. That would have been, I mean, I guess you could say that was a swing play, because if they connect with that, you got to think they at least find the scoreboard, with a field goal. I mean, they're going to take over. Excuse me, they're gonna, if that ball is completed, it's just outside our 30-yard line. If it's completed, I mean, it's definitely good for a first down. But some other closing thoughts here, before I get into the rest of the schedule. They ran a high and low concept that we just couldn't stop. They would do it out of boots, play fakes real quick, where they just, quick outs and things to the flat, arrow routes that we just couldn't stop. One of them gave me flashbacks to 2012, where Trey Burton did it and, screamed down the sideline. Luckily, we caught him this time around. I think that Napier was getting us to use a timeout on that final touchdown when they scored with, what, 29, 30 seconds left. I don't think he had any intention of going for it. I think he should have. If I'm a Florida Gator, I'm like, go for this. I mean, do it. Like, you need to play to win this game. I mean, you just silenced the crowd. Do it. But I think he knew that our offense had the potential to drive the field to do something, and he gets us to burn one of our timeouts. So, take with that what you will. I think the play of the game is arguably Bryson Eason in overtime, where he perfectly reads the screen, undercuts the block, makes the tackle in the backfield, which is ultimately going to push them farther back for the field goal attempt that they're about to make. All right. So a lot of thoughts there. I do say, as a Tennessee fan, that I hate that Mertz is now done for the rest of the season on, I mean, it wasn't even a football play. I was wrong on him coming into Florida. Like, man, this he hasn't done anything in Wisconsin. What makes us think that he's going to do anything at Florida? There you go. I fell for transitive property. Keenan Pilley, he's done. We got that news today, and just unfortunate. A guy who has all the potential in the world, more than enough potential and football mind to play and do well at the next level, but the poor guy just can't stay healthy. Begging God for a speedy recovery that he can get to the NFL combine, put on a great combine, get drafted, go make all his money. Would love for that for him. But let's get into the final thing here by looking at the rest of Tennessee's schedule. So if you're watching on YouTube, you take a look here. Obviously, not breaking news to anybody here, but Alabama coming to town, and not going to do a preview here, but all I would say regarding that one is you got to get your crap together, and you better get it together fast, because Bama is beatable, but they can move the ball. And that is going to be a major problem if you can't. So you're going to get a bye week before that Kentucky game, which is going to turn out to just to be incredibly massive for us. Kentucky is now a problem. Thank God that that game is in Knoxville. As of right now, should be a win. Mississippi State continuing to improve, but still should be a win. Should be. Hopefully, the bye week and even this week, we can do things to get better offensively, whether that's just getting better at what we do or innovating. Innovating. Michael has got a great idea that I hope that he's going to throw at you, but I'll say this, it just looks a lot like what 2019 Kentucky did. Food for thought. Okay. Get innovative. You might have to risk running Nico some to make them respect you. Maybe it's just taking more shots here and there. I'm not really sure. I'm not the one that gets paid millions to do it. But what I'm telling you right now is what you did on Saturday is going to get you beat by three scores by Alabama come this coming Saturday. Anyway, it should be Mississippi State. At this rate, you're not beating Georgia. It's just not going to happen, especially not in Athens. Not this Tennessee football team, which is so upsetting. And I really wish I would have opened this, because if you'd have told any Tennessee fan that a Josh Heupel offense is going to be trying to find its gear by the Florida game or the Alabama game, we'd have told you're crazy, or like they're just the offense is struggling. Like, you're psycho. Like, you have no idea what you're talking about. The lovely thing about college football, nobody knows, right? So anyway, you have a defense that can hang with Georgia. You have an elite defense that can do it. That can put you in a position to beat a team like Georgia. But this offense just can't. Not right now, anyway. You should get a win against UTEP. I don't see any reason why you shouldn't. I'd put my annual salary on that one. But Vanderbilt, as of right now, scares the crap out of me. And it should anybody who has, because Vanderbilt has dynamic quarterback play, and they are playing with house money every single week, doing whatever it is they have to do to win. Teams who are confident and dynamic quarterback play are extremely hard to beat. Extreme. I don't care how good the roster is comparatively. I don't care the brand or logo. It does not matter. Vanderbilt is going to present a serious problem. A serious, serious problem. As of right now, I'll pick us to win that game, but better get your crap together come Saturday, because this is a big rivalry, and much like the Florida game, Heupel needs now to flip this narrative. This game is at home, obviously. The next one will be played in Tuscaloosa. You're looking at DeBoer's second years. Schematically, players will be playing faster. They always do in second year schemes. You're year four, man. You're year four. And Bama, who is completely beatable, year one head coach, the greatest of all time, is gone, and they are vulnerable. Get your crap together. I am not glass half empty. I'm glass half full. I don't know how big the glass is. I'm optimistic. I'm choosing. You have to know, though, I'm choosing to be optimistic. I am choosing this. I'm having to speak this into my soul. All right. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with me. I'm going to end that awkwardly right there, because it just is what it is right now to be a Tennessee football fan. Tennessee fans, enjoy it. We just haven't beaten Florida this millennium, just haven't done it. And the fact that we did it, we found a way to do it, celebrate it, rejoice in it. We get 360 something days at this point to celebrate it over all of your Florida fans. You know, even if we lose every game from here on out, you know, we beat Florida. So there's been times in the past where we found ways to lose it, but we didn't Saturday. Hoping the same thing for this coming Saturday. While you're here, make sure you hit like on the video. If you're on YouTube, make sure you hit subscribe to the channel if you haven't done that already. Again, we want to say thank you so much for being for giving of your time to listen to the people like us who just, it's opinion. It's really all it is. And I'm extremely grateful that you think enough of mine and Mike's to turn it on and to listen to it. Appreciate it so, so, so much. I will say one more thing. Listen, I love Tennessee just as much as the next guy, but don't let this impact your emotions. Don't let it impact your family, your kids, whatever. You know, be upset. Move on. At the end of the day, it is just a game. There are way more important things to be upset about. All right. Hey, I love you guys. Thank you so, so much again for hanging out and letting me tickle your ears. I love you guys. God bless. Go Vols.
Reigns.